The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Lots to talk about today. Later on in the show, we'll be reflecting on the league leaders losing in both Germany and Spain. We'll kick things off, though, in the Premier League. Everton with a 2-0 victory at Anfield against Liverpool in the Merseyside derby. Frank Leboeuf, Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol here to reflect on that win for Carlo Ancelotti's side. Stevie, I feel compelled to start with you. Sum it up for us.
I wonder why. Listen, the only thing I can tell you is that it was completely and utterly well-deserved. At no stage in this game did Everton look uncomfortable or under any real pressure. Yes, Jordan Pickford had a couple of good saves, but the truth is they were more of a surprise when they came, the shots, than actually anything Liverpool did. An open play to break Everton down. They just simply couldn't break them down. Not for the first time recently, but at the end of the day, it was a perfect performance from Everton. They got the early goal, and then they had a great defensive line, and then they defended well. Got the second goal with a penalty. 2-0, thanks for coming. Liverpool can have no complaints.
Craig, we've talked at length on the show, haven't we, about the injuries, of course, justifiably, as to why Liverpool are struggling so much this season and how it affects them going forward, Jordan Henderson dropping back. But even when they're in the attacking third, even you got Firmino, Salah and Mane, in the past it looked like they were going to score every time they had the ball. Now they look clueless.
You just don't know what's going to... You don't know what Liverpool are going to turn up. The Liverpool that were a threat in Leipzig almost every time they went forward, or the one that struggled too many times in the Premier League this season, and it was the latter today again. And yeah, I mean, look, Everton had a plan. They were defensively strong. They're not fussed about having, you know, X amount of possession. As Stevie said, the back line was good. Godfrey was and Kane were excellent. And the plan was for Ancelotti. He put Coleman on the right side in midfield. He could play there or drop back into the fullback to make a five to nullify Andy Robertson, and he got an hour out of James Rodriguez playing in that little hole behind Richarlison. And then it was clever at the end of the game, or it was a no-brainer, because you've got two inexperienced centre-halves. You bring Calvert-Lewin on, who's been out, to go alongside Richarlison, and you've got the big two heavy hitters up front to really pressurise that Liverpool back line that is already creaking. So, you know, it was clever from Ancelotti in terms of how he went about it. I mean, it wasn't rocket science, but he got his personnel right, he got his tactics right. And from Liverpool's perspective, it's a flat front line and a back four that with centre halves that are just not good enough, and not at this level anyway. And I can't say much more than that.
Why can't they score, Stevie?
Well, listen, they're completely out of form, and that happens. It's just unusual that it happens to three at the one time. The other thing is, because of the changes in the middle of the park, they're not getting the ball as quickly as they used to, which means that they don't have as much space. And when they don't get the ball as quickly, not only do they not have as much space, but there's even more numbers behind the ball. So you add all of these things up, then it's a real struggle. Plus, basically, you're looking at a side that has had the energy, seems like, sucked out of it. Whether it's just energy or confidence, you name it, it's been sucked out of it. And every time you step on the field, you always think it's not going to get any worse. But it did again today with Jordan Henderson going out. So, right now, for Liverpool and Liverpool's players, they're hanging on, really hanging on desperately for anything, including form going forward.
And Frank, inevitably with all these injuries, you know, that's come in, he hasn't looked particularly convincing at the back. They look soft, don't they, defensively?
They do, but they don't have the choice to try something. And now that Henderson is injured, Fabinho, we don't know when he's going to be back very soon. But I think, as I said already, Klopp has to try, you know, with the defense, maybe an inexperienced defense, but still with center halves, you know, he got Davis during the winter time, and he has Phillips and Kabak. He has to try to create the two center half that he will need until the end of the season, and in fact reset the midfield zone with Fabinho and maybe Anderson when he's going to be back. We talked about that, and I really think that if it doesn't work, the three at front is because Anderson is not there, because Fabinho is not there as well, because we can talk about Thiago Alcantara, the way he plays, if he's a good signing or not. You know, I know Klopp tried to defend him, but he doesn't play the way Liverpool wants to play, which is more direct football. And I saw Anderson coming into the middle, in the midfield zone during the first half, and it's when Liverpool was quite dangerous and Pickford made good saves. But the only time when Liverpool created something is when Anderson went into the midfield, the middle of the park. But now he's injured. I think Davis is signed for that. He's not coming from a big club. He's coming from the Championship. He has to be tried. He's a central defender, and we can have a good surprise. They have no choice.
He's struggling with injury as well. I think the one thing
that I would say, Frank, is as well, is maybe the one criticism of Klopp. I mean, no criticism in terms of the players that they have out, because that's factual. I mean, it's been a horrendous injury run, but I don't remember him ever trying to find a scenario, as you said, and maybe say, I tell you what, today we're going to have Alexander-Arnold and Robertson as the wing-backs, and I'm going to have a back three. So I'm going to give maybe Kabak and somebody else a bit of protection by putting a Henderson back there, maybe as a third centre-half or as a sweeper, just to try something, because it's quite clear, more often than not all the time, but when they play these guys at the back, they're getting exposed. And I don't remember them, certainly off the top of my head, changing the shape of that back line. And I think that could be one criticism. You say, okay, you like playing a back four, but this injury list is so bad that you might have to try something different. The other side of the coin is, I don't know what the exact figures are for missing out in the Champions League, but I would imagine it's going to be quite hefty. And this is at a time when Klopp, Dan, has already, it seems, had some internal chat, shall we say, about bringing players in, both in the summer and in the transfer window. And there seems to be some disagreements between him, the sporting directors, and the owners about what the budget is. Now, obviously, if you get Van Dijk and Gomez back, then that solves that, and they should be back next year. But there's still other areas of the team that they're going to have to strengthen. If Wijnaldum leaves on a free transfer, a backup for Mino, for Mino when he's out of form, and it's sort of another striker. And these are all going to cost money. And if you're not in the Champions League, that is certainly going to affect the kind of budget that Klopp's going to be dealing with come the summer.
I just want to go back to the game. Stevie, obviously the second goal in the end 2-0, it wasn't that relevant, but it sealed the deal for Everton. Was it a penalty for you?
Yeah, and the reason I think it was a penalty, the answer is yes. And the reason I think it was a penalty is because Alexander-Arnold, no question, makes sure or is making sure that if Calvert-Lewin is going to be able to stay on his feet, he's not getting over his right leg.
Right.
Had he just left his leg out the way, I would have questioned it, because it seems to me that Calvert-Lewin is the one that kind of runs into the back of him. But as soon as Alexander-Arnold clearly lifts his right leg just to make sure that Calvert-Lewin's not getting to it, then for me that's when it becomes a penalty kick.
Frank, do you agree?
No, I don't. I'm still wondering, you know, if Stevie saw the action and saw Calvert-Lewin hitting the Alexander-Arnold head and the back of his head before falling. So how Alexander-Arnold can prevent that and avoid a knee in the back of his head to not be touched by Calvert-Lewin and to avoid that kind of hit, you know, and I don't understand. I don't really don't understand that penalty. Really, I was really upset. Well, of course, he's irrelevant, as you said. He won't change the thing, and the Toffees did everything they had to do to win that game, and he deserved to win that game. But really, the ref went to the VAR, checked like 2 seconds, and said penalty. I don't get it.
What he's done is he's given the ref, he's making it easy for the referee. That's what he's done. You know, there's plenty of penalties that are only given because you've given the referee a decision to make. If Alexander-Arnold just keeps his feet on the floor, then it's not a penalty. The fact that he clearly raises it to make sure that Calvert-Lewin's not getting there makes it an easier decision for the referee. And that's why he gives a penalty, because it's an easier decision.
But I'm sorry, I didn't see that, so maybe you're right. But does he put his leg up after he's hit in his head or before?
As he's falling, after.
As he's falling.
Oh, after.
So Calvert-Lewin strikes the back. Calvert-Lewin strikes the back of Alexander-Arnold and is somewhat falling. He's not going straight down. He's somewhat fallen, and he still looks as though he's going to get to the ball. But then Alexander-Arnold then raises his leg, and if I'm the referee and I'm going, well, and then he collapses down, then if I'm the referee, then that's giving me an excuse to give a penalty kick. Because Alexander-Arnold's Calvert-Lewin's not getting there.
Okay, Stevie. So saying that, you know, we go back to Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain, when in fact there is a penalty against Kurzawa because he hits with his knee De Jong's calves. So, you know, as long as somebody makes a mistake or makes a foul, sorry, the first, he should be punished. So who hits the first, the other? Calvert-Lewin or the other? Calvert-Lewin hits.
Calvert-Lewin hits. Calvert-Lewin. Alexander-Arnold has gone to ground, right, to make a challenge. And as he's gone to ground, Calvert-Lewin's momentum takes him into the back of Alexander-Arnold. That is clear. But I'm saying because he lifts his leg, it makes it easier for the referee to give a penalty. Referee can just say, well, he's trying to bring him down.
Craig, what do you think?
I think we can agree to disagree, Stevie, but I really think...
It sounds like it, aye.
Craig?
The results are in for the Eurovision Song Contest. Scotland 2, France 0.
Craig, should have been sent off?
My God.
There you go.
Do you think he should have been sent off?
Yes, 3 months red card.
Because people will say, well, look at David Luiz against Wolves. Obviously, it was accidental. There was no intent there. He got the red card, and then even then they appealed it. They didn't.
We all agreed that it was stupid to send off David Luiz. So we couldn't carry on. We can't carry on saying that on top of it, Alexander Arnold should be sent off. We can agree to disagree on the penalty, but asking for a red card, it makes completely no sense for me. You know, the guy doesn't even see Calvert-Lewin. At first.
Craig?
Well, you can't send David Luiz off and then reject... They rejected the appeal, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
And reject the appeal and then, whether we like it or not, have a different set of rules for another player at a different club. They can't... They should not be adjudicating the games in that manner, because what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And you know, David Luiz, as we know, made no attempt to play the ball... or play the man. It was a pure accident, but it was a penalty kick. He saw red, and so if we're all staying by the letter of the law, whether we think it's stupid or not, then technically, yeah, he should have gone, because the ball was not there to be won.
Stevie?
I concur with my good friend, Mr. Craig Burley.
Okay, let's move on, shall we, and focus on the earlier games.
That's a Scottish mafia. That's a real Scottish mafia right now.
Okay, they do.
Let's focus on Southampton against
Freedom!
Chelsea. Southampton, of course, no wins in six. Going into this game, however, they managed to get a point at St Mary's. I'm going to start with a big talking point, because I found this fascinating, the Hudson-Odoi situation. Of course, subbed on and then subbed off. The big question mark was whether or not he was injured. He was not. Thomas Tuchel said he did not like his body language and his attitude out there. We've talked about this before, boys, and I know you've all kind of said this is one of the biggest insults that you can throw at a player, Craig.
Yeah, and sometimes I've looked at it that way, but in all fairness to, and this might surprise you, I don't know, but in all fairness to Tuchel, now that he's come out and explained, in fairness to him, he's come out and publicly explained why he did it. I'm kind of with the manager here, because he's gone into this club that has renowned for having power struggles, having big players, sacking managers, you know, left, right and centre, as we know. And he's come in at a difficult period. They're trying to get in the top four. He knows what's expected of him, and he's trying to lay the letter of the law down. and he's tried to nail it down early. And he said, I was not happy with what I was getting and what I was asking for, and I didn't like the attitude. And I think he's sending a message out here to the other players. Now, you could look at it, and I don't know what the boys are going to say. We have not discussed this. But you could look at it and say, well, that's how you're going to lose a player. Or you could look at it and say, it's going to make the rest of the dressing room sit up because he's not frightened to make these big calls. Hudson-Odoi, don't forget, has been a player who has played a lot since Tuchel comes in. Yep. He likes him. He really likes him. He said he might even play the Champions League in midweek. But I did not like, he said, what I seen from the player, and I expect better. And for that reason, on this occasion, I'm going to go on the manager's side.
Stevie?
Well, I've actually done this. I brought a guy on with 20 minutes to go and took him off with 5 minutes to go. And if I could have my time over, I would do it differently. And I would do it differently because...
Were you taking him off earlier?
No, I think in the case of Tuchel could quite easily have taken off James and just moved Hudson-Odoi. And then afterwards, he can either berate him in the dressing room in front of the team or take him aside on his own and say, look, I wasn't happy with the way you were going about this. I could have taken you off, but I didn't. And then that way, you're still having a go at him, but you're keeping him on side. I mean, it's going to be hard for him to have Hudson-Odoi on his side. He's completely humiliated him by taking him off in the first place, and then he goes out in the press and completely humiliates him again. So he's doubled down on it. So I think he's gone the wrong way about it. As I told you, I did it once, and I would do it differently. I would completely do it a different way again because I completely lost the player.
Go on, Frank.
It was a complete humiliation for me, and I don't understand his behaviour. I understand what Craig said, and I agree with him. Hudson-Odoi is maybe the favourite players for Tuchel, and he used them a lot. You know, he brought him back into the first 11 as soon as he signed for Chelsea. So what he's trying to do, I'm going to use a metaphor. I think he's like a dog, you know, going into a park and trying to pee everywhere to make sure that he's going to design all his territory. And it's what he's doing right now. I'm going to take my favorite player, and if he's not good, I'm going to put him out. I want to know why and how he doesn't put Werner out. Werner completely disappeared. It was really average first half. Completely disappeared the second half. But stayed 90 minutes on the field. I don't get it. I think it was some other players. Kovacic was awful the second half. And I've never seen Kovacic losing so many balls, you know, in the second half. But he went out, but not like that. You can't do that. You can't bring somebody in and put it out, you know, like 25 minutes after. That's horrible for a 20-year-old person. I mean, I understand maybe he talked to him after, he said, I'm going to play you in the Champions League. But you don't do that. But I think for me, it's just that. It's just what I explained before. He did like a dog on the to create his territory.
Marking his territory, that's Frank, it. I think, is where we're going.
Well, he's going to succeed and fail down it his way, whether we like it or not. And look, he tinkered at Mainz, he tinkered at Dortmund. I presume he tinkered at PSG at times, maybe not to that extent. But he's very reactive as a coach. You can see it on the touchline. And I get it. Had that been me in that scenario, personally, would I have been unhappy? I'd have been kicking the doors in to his office. I'm not the individual, and he's the manager, and he's saying, I get it, Frank, and you're right. I mean, Werner, there was a load of these players that were awful again. Mason Mount was the most liveliest player that they had. This guy that supposedly only got a game because he was Lampard's favourite. I mean, what a bunch of Muppets that were. Those were talking about that. But here he is sending a young guy on with specific instructions, a talented guy. And he's saying it wasn't because he made mistakes. It wasn't because he wasn't good on the ball. It was because he wasn't doing the work rate things that he wanted. And so he's sending a message here. And he will live. Listen, they've got a tough string of games coming up now. Chelsea starting in midweek. But they got some of the bigger hitters in the Premier League coming up. So he's going to potentially live and die by these decisions. We'll find out. But what we can't escape as well, off the back of this substitution, is a smokescreen. Chelsea were pretty awful again, weren't they? I mean, it was you know, 500 passes a goal again. I mean, there was like 25-minute period, half-hour period in the first half. They never had a shot at goal, and they had possession for the sake of it. And that's been one of the things we've noticed so far with Tuchel's teams. There's been lots and lots and lots of possession. Most of the time they've had results. Today they didn't. And now we have a big talking point, and he's got some huge games coming up. So it's going to be interesting to see what the reaction is from both Hudson-Odoi and this Chelsea squad.
What was wrong with them today, Stevie?
It's very difficult to put your finger on it, because it was the same when Frank was there. You know, they went 17 games and they were great going forward, and they moved the ball quickly and they created chances and scored goals. And then it stopped, and then Frank got the bullet, and then they brought Tuchel in, and it hasn't changed in my eyes going forward. There's no difference. They're not creating any more chances or scoring any more goals than they did with Frank. So I don't see any change. I think after this amount of time, it has to be who's playing. It has to be the three he has. He has to find the best three that actually can play with each other. And to do that, he's going to have to make a decision and then give them time. Because yet again, it's a change in personnel, which is what we said about Frank. We kept giving Frank pelters, saying, look, you need to decide on a lineup and give them some time to play together. And the same thing is going on with Tuchel, and nothing's changing because they're not creating and they're not scoring that many goals. So decide,
Dan,
and stick with
Dan,
it for a bit.
They lost a bad goal today when you know, completely against the run of play, and you know, whether it was Azpilicueta not tucking in or Zuma just not seeing the run in behind them. You take your pick, it was probably Zuma should have had himself in a better position. But a lot of people have been talking about the clean sheets, right? But that's smoke and mirrors when you actually look at it. Okay, they didn't keep a clean sheet today. But you look at the teams they played, first and foremost, Wolves, with half a squad, hardly got over the halfway line. Burnley, yeah, hardly got over the halfway line and rarely do. Newcastle, hardly got over the halfway line. And then they did keep a clean sheet, if memory serves me right, against Tottenham. And guess what Tottenham don't do half the time? Attack. So they've actually played a lot of teams who spend most of the time in their own half defending. That's telling you more about why they've been keeping clean sheets rather than this fantastic shift to three at the back and Hudson-Odoi coming in and Alonso coming in. It's been saying more about the opposition than what it's been about any Tuchel changes. He's made some changes, don't get me wrong, shape and personnel, but that's not why they've been keeping clean sheets. The opposition, attacking-wise, have been dire.
Atletico Madrid, Manchester United, Liverpool and Everton are their next four matches, Frank.
It's going to be a real test, and we're going to see, you know, where we can put Chelsea. I'm not convinced offensively, and as Craig mentioned, I'm not convinced defensively, because right now when we tried, Mr. Tuchel tried Azpilicueta and Reece James on the right side, and I guess it doesn't work. And to answer that question on the goal they conceded, it's mostly Azpilicueta who doesn't cover Zuma, doesn't work with Reece James, who wants to go forward when he doesn't have the ball and they don't get the ball back. So they have to work together. They really have to work defensively if they want to be very solid. And they're not right now. And as Craig mentioned, you know, the team that they played against and they got the clean sheet are not teams who are going to go forward. So we're going to see very soon what worth Chelsea. That's for sure.
Boys, as always, thank you very much. Be sure to join us on the next edition of the show. More Premier League matches, of course, on Sunday, including Arsenal against Manchester City.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Eintracht Frankfurt beat Bayern Munich by 2-1, a thoroughly deserved win. Well, Stephen Craig's still with us, and we welcome to the show as well. Jan Arge Fjortoff is with us. Jan is a former Eintracht Frankfurt striker. You must have thoroughly enjoyed this.
Yeah, it was fantastic, especially the 15, 21st minute of the game. They dominated Bayern, and Kamada 1-0, and then a fantastic goal from Jones brought them up to 2-0. But you always expect Bayern to come back. And of course, Lewandowski scoring after 52 minutes, and you think, well, it's going to end 2-5 then, normal Bayern. But this is not normal Bayern. They had a 3-3 against Bielefeld at home, and now they're losing to Eintracht Frankfurt. And if RB Leipzig tomorrow can win, maybe we can have a little battle in Germany.
Oh, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? For everyone, Craig, as Jan mentioned, when Lewandowski scored, you thought, oh, that's it. You know, Bayern are going to come back and win this game, as we've seen them do, of course, on previous occasions this season. But they didn't. Why didn't they?
Because they don't have the cutting edge that they've had at this moment in time. Without Thomas Müller as well, who's quarantining with the COVID since he's returned from the Club World Cup. So there was no Serge Gnabry either. So there's a few different factors in there. Obviously lost Thiago to Liverpool a few months ago, so he's a playmaker for them. People talking about him at Liverpool say, he still does this. You don't get the medals that guy's won without being a great asset to the team. So lots of different factors, but quite frankly, Dan, this game could have been dead and buried at half-time. I mean, that was how many times Eintracht Frankfurt got in. Every time they went forward, they looked as if they were going to get in. They scored some great goals. Yes, Kevin Trapp had to make some good saves when required, but yeah, I like you and everybody else thought when Lewandowski put it in, well, that's Eintracht Frankfurt's number up now, but no, they hung in, and in fact, they could have added to their tally before the end of the game.
First half, Stevie, there was only one team in it. What was wrong with Bayern?
I'll tell you what was wrong with Bayern. Süle was playing right back. That's what's wrong with Bayern. I mean, listen, you can argue that in the middle of the park, Bayern are struggling to control anything. They were the same against Bielefeld. But when you don't have the ball in the middle of the park, the opposition has it, and you're playing Süle at right back, against Kosic, who just wants to go at him and get it past him and whip balls in, then you're in big trouble. And that's pretty much what they did. They just kept firing that ball out to that left-hand side. Kosic went at Süle, and then chaos ensued. And even the second goal, when Süle wasn't wide and was in the middle, he didn't close Yunus down, and he just stuck it in the top corner. So, combination of playing players in the wrong spot, plus no control in the middle of the park. And again, you boys have said it. I thought when Lewandowski scored, I was looking at 2-2. But 5 minutes after that, things went back to kind of normal, and there really wasn't an awful lot between the two sides. And of course, Stuttgart should have had a penalty. How you can look at a VAR and not see multiple fouls here by Alphonso Davies, never mind a foul, multiple, and then end up giving Bayern a throw-in, is way beyond me.
Dan, Stevie's moved on from Sergio Ramos to Nicolas Zula now, he wants to get the knife into
I actually felt bad for the guy. I'm like, why is he out there? I mean, he's like, what have I done to deserve to be stuck wide against a guy who just wants to run at fullbacks? And certainly wants to run at me. I mean, there comes a stage when it's not his fault.
Yeah, but it's a point as well, boys. We are talking down Bayern, but I think that we just have to talk a bit about Frankfurt as well. They were missing their top scorer, Silva. He wasn't in there. Jovic had not a great game, but he was there. I think the key to Eintracht Frankfurt at the moment, they are solid, they are good organized. With Kamada and Jones in that position behind the striker, they are hard to take on. And Kostic, I mean, he's on fire at the moment with his assist and, like Stevie was saying, taking people on. And I'm so impressed with Eintracht Frankfurt now. They were before this round 9 points ahead of Dortmund, but now Dortmund, of course, bounced back. But it's just unbelievable to see this Eintracht Frankfurt team, who has been reinvented the last couple of years, being up there with the best boys in Germany.
I have to say, Dan, it does look awkward watching Nicolas Süle play fullbacks. Not the first time I've seen him do it this year. He's done it on more than one occasion, but it just doesn't look right. And as Stevie said, he's clearly like a fish out of water out there. But I know they're short of numbers, Bayern, but one of the things I thought he might have done when Goretzka was coming on, I thought, oh, he's putting Kimmich back to right back, because we know, like Philip Lahm was in his day, can do the full back and the midfield job probably equally as well as each other. And I thought, oh, he's putting Kimmich to right back because Kostic is a big threat. But he didn't do that. And quite frankly, I got the feeling when that VAR decision was made that Karl-Heinz Rummenigge had just barreled his way into the bar room, whatever it was, and sloshed the guy out the way and went, I'm dealing with this. Because tell me a player that goes to ground on this kind of scenario, whether the contact is intentional or not, and as Stevie said, there was a little pull, then there was contact with the leg, intentional or not. How the hell? I mean, Derek Ray tells us everything in Germany is the greatest. How the hell can they look at this and Greg, not see that it's a penalty kick? It didn't cost Eintracht Frankfurt in the end, but what you have here is, oh yeah, the big boys always get the right decisions, they always get the big call, and it's hard to argue when you see something like this.
But we have Craig, you and me, we had a discussion on Twitter about that situation. Of course, it was a clear penalty. It was a red card for Davis. And of course, the boy would have liked to score that goal against Bayern. But if Derek is saying that everything is perfect in Germany, ask him about the first head of VAR there.
Better.
He was fired. He was fired because people thought he was a Schalke fan. Can you imagine that in Germany?
Steve, last word on this.
But I was wondering, I thought some of the substitutions were strange. As Craig's saying, I thought that was a certainty. Kimmich going to right back. That didn't happen. And you're 2-1 down with a few minutes to go, and you take off Sané and put on Javi Martinez. I was thinking, why would you do that? He'd already taken Kingsley Coman off and put Hernandez on. I'm thinking, that second one just threw me for a loop. I'm thinking, this makes no sense whatsoever. So Hansi Flick's got to have to look in the mirror as well.
First little blip, isn't it, for Flick? First proper test, Jan, during his tenure, because it's been all roses so far.
Yeah, it has. And there was some rumours between him and Salihamidzic, and it's the head of sport, of course, but about different players. He wants to use Alaba, he wants to use Boateng, and the people in and around the club, they want the players are more or less on their way out. Alaba said it officially now. He has a verbal agreement with Real Madrid, but it's not signed yet. Boateng on its way out, and he loves to play them, and Salihamidzic and some of the other big guns around the club want him to play other players. So slowly it's starting a bit there, but I think Craig said it has a name, Thomas Müller, because in these kind of games, when they are a bit down, when they need someone there to get them going again, get that energy, get that spirit into the team, that is always Thomas Müller, and he at the moment is not available.
Meanwhile, the big derby today, Borussia Dortmund thrashing Schalke by 4-0. Erling Haaland with a brace, one of them a brilliant scissor kick. Jadon Sancho getting an assist and a goal as well. And the two of them spoke to Archie Rintat after the game.
Erling Haaland, Jadon Sancho, what a day for both you and Borussia Dortmund. Firstly, Erling Haaland, what did you make of Jadon Sancho's goal?
Yeah, it was a nice goal and he grabs a goal and an assist today. Oh. And yeah, he has to keep going and to get the scoring points, goal and assist. It's important for him and it's a pleasure to play with this guy.
Jadon Sancho, what did you make of Erling Haaland's first goal?
It didn't surprise me. I know that. It might have surprised the fans out there, but you know, I see this guy in training every day and he puts in the work and, you know, he does some crazy things in training. So today I'm not surprised, but it's a great goal. All credit to this man. And, you know, he got us the 3 points and I'm just happy again. Playing with him is just such a great feeling for me. And, you know, because every time I put in good balls, I know he's going to score. So, yeah.
Erling, I have to ask you about that goal as well. Can you describe what was going through your head as the ball came through the air?
Yeah, I was expecting the defender to be a little bit closer to me, but he wasn't. So I just, I can shoot the ball. So, and then I did. So it was perfect timing and, yeah, as I said, good assist from this guy, and yeah, we it was a nice goal, and yeah, we keep going.
And hit it well, you very much did. Jaden, are you aware of the significance of winning this game by, I think, the perfect scoreline in the eyes of Borussia Dortmund fans, the fact that you win it 0-4?
Yeah, I've played in these games quite a few times now, and I know what it means to the fans. And today was a big day for us, and we knew that we had to come out here today and show the fans that we keep the fighting spirit and show a good performance. Unfortunately, the fans can't be here to celebrate for us. So I think at the end, as you saw all of us celebrating, that's what it means to us and obviously the fans. So I'm sure the fans could feel the vibe through the TV today, and you know, I'm just happy that we got the 3 points and we have to keep on this form.
And just finally, Erling, we had it announced earlier this week that Marco Rose will be the next coach of Borussia Dortmund. You've worked with him before at RB Salzburg. How much are you looking forward to working with him again?
Yeah, I mean, I had a half a year with him and I played 5 games in total, so hopefully I'll be in his plans.
I think you just might be.
hopefully.
Both of these youngsters tearing up, of course, in particular Erling Haaland, 27 goals in just 25 matches so far this season. Jan, that first goal was a bit special.
It was simply brilliant. And I mean, this week we saw a game against Sevilla against two great, great centre-half, and he scored 2 goals. His first half in that Champions League game is the best I've seen him since he came to Dortmund. Absolutely brilliant. And then he went out again today with people comparing him and Mbappé is going to be the new big thing in town after Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, still very hungry. I don't want to talk about him being the best player in the world. I'm just saying what he can do best in the world is to create space for himself. And if you have a very exact look at that goal, he takes him away. And then the cross from Sancho comes in, and you can just see the defender. Well, I will check if he takes it on the chest. I will have him, but I will let him have a volley because that is too difficult. He will never get that ball anyway. And boom, it's a candidate for a goal of the season in the German Bundesliga. And then he does the same in the second half, get another goal. But that first goal, absolutely brilliant. And those kind of volleys, I mean, we've seen them over the years, people doing that. And Erling Haaland, he is 20, 43 games for Dortmund, 43 goals. Not a bad stat.
It's not bad, is it? Jan, away from Haaland overall, of course, a big 3 points for Borussia Dortmund, not necessarily as they're looking to close the gap on Bayern Munich, but close the gap on the top four.
Unbelievable, because they fired Favre to come closer to Bayern Munich. And now they find himself before this game against Schalke. Say that was the last chance for Schalke, so it could be a difficult game, but they are so bad. I mean, they couldn't... Well, beginning of second half, they were okay, but still 4-0 is a massive result. Before this game, they were 9 points behind Wolfsburg, 9 points behind Eintracht Frankfurt with a bad goal difference. Today, they won. They scored 4 goals. They're up there with the goal difference with the two teams. I had a look at the program of Bayern, of Dortmund. Next game, Bielefeld at home. They have trouble to break down those kind of teams. But still, I've seen something. I talked to the players in Dortmund, and what they found now, they found that they have to battle harder. Mm. They can't do this indoor kind of football play that Colombia used to do in the 90s. They have to battle for their points, and that's what they do the last 2 games.
Thanks. It's just a shame. It's just a shame, Dan, isn't it, that Erling Haaland's coming through at a time when Norway have got a horrible team, isn't it?
He's never getting... Stevie's bored. He's not even paying attention.
No, but it's a good point. I mean, because when we are talking about Ballon d'Or, we discussed this on the show here as well, who will get it, him or Mbappé. And of course, in all kind of corners of life, it's an advantage to be a Norwegian. But in a Ballon d'Or, it's not an advantage.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Be sure to join us on Extra Time. It's the same lineup. We'll be talking about those haunting figures behind Jan and working out exactly who they are.
They're dead bodies that he buried.
I hope they're not. Check that out over on YouTube. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Let's turn our attention to La Liga. Atletico Madrid losing by 2-0 against Levante. That means that Atleti, of course, have dropped 4 points in their last two matches against the same opponents, ironically, as we welcome in Ali Moreno to the show. Ali, Levante very much the stone in Atleti's shoe.
Very much so. Meanwhile, Barcelona and Real Madrid fans are going, hey, Levante, woo! Yeah, baby, we love you. Because what they've done is that they've given Barcelona and Real Madrid hope. Atletico Madrid has shown some signs of leaking oil over the last couple of weeks, but we have sort of kind of explained that away through saying and focusing on Luis Suarez being effective and efficient and scoring goals in the manner that he is, and choosing to ignore the fact that if Luis Suarez is not scoring goals, it's not coming from anywhere else. The other thing that we have focused on over the last few weeks is saying, you know what? Look at Atletico Madrid, that personality, that character, and coming back after being a goal down and actually finding ways of winning a game, even if it is by a deflection or what have you. Well, the other argument is they were a goal down. They had to come back. So you've been seeing a little bit of a breakdown from Atletico Madrid, and eventually this week it caught up to them. Levante in the midweek was difficult, was tough, was physical. Atletico Madrid couldn't quite figure it out. They couldn't quite create enough chances or score goals. Okay, they tied the game 1-1. And today, you may have thought, well, of course there's going to be a reaction here from Atletico Madrid. This is when they established themselves. They've had some difficulties with injuries, with COVID, with absences. But you think, you know what? It's all right. It's Atletico Madrid. It's at home. There's no chance that Levante can get a result against Atletico Madrid again. Well, not only is it Levante, but it's the second team of Levante. It's the B team of Levante. Because today, the coach from Levante, Paco López, decided, you know what? I'm going to rotate my team. I'm going to give seven guys that play in the midweek, they're not going to be available, including the goalkeeper. And guess what? Levante was much better than Atletico Madrid, certainly in the first half. Second half was a different story. Atletico Madrid did create some opportunities, and the goalkeeper, in this case, Diego Cárdenas, came up with save after save after save. Luis Suarez hit the post. So all the things that were going in the direction of Atletico Madrid, now they're not. And this is when you have to have Diego Simeone being a coming presence. Good luck with that. He's going to be the coming presence. He's the one that's going to tell this team, hey, we're still ahead. No, nothing to see here, nothing to worry about. We'll see if Diego Simeone is made for that and built for that, and whether this team continues the collapse or whether they find a bounce back.
Atleti's goal rightly disallowed, in your opinion, Ali?
Yeah, I think so. I think Atletico Madrid, when you think of the opportunities that they created, they were a lot like that. It was kind of bounces here and there and kind of coming this way and other in a second play and a 50-50 chance and whatever it may be. But it wasn't really clear opportunities other than the post that Luis Suarez hit. But yes, I think there is a shove from Luis Suarez on the defender. He's unable to clear the ball and Angel Correa gets on the rebound. But honestly, when you look at Atletico Madrid, there was a half chance here from Joao Felix. There was maybe another couple chances here. Tomas Lemar hits a volley. But it wasn't like they were overwhelming. They were better than Levante in the second half, but not creating many opportunities. And again, if it's not Luis Suarez, who else is it going to be? Not many answers came forward today.
So that the earlier game, putting pressure then on Real Madrid to try and close the gap. They were against Rayo Vallecano. 1-0, Casemiro header. This game, it just wasn't very good.
Well, it was so bad that it wasn't Rayo Vallecano that they were playing, it was Valladolid.
Valladolid, exactly. See, Thomas, sort yourself out. So in Real Madrid, don't even know what you're doing. Don't even know what you're talking about. Casemiro, though, with the header, Ali, which proved to be the difference between the two sides.
Right, and while it was ugly, while at times unwatchable, while you may say, you know what, Valladolid are unfortunate, they didn't get something out of this game, Valladolid are second to last in this league. And yet, Real Madrid will be encouraged because they get 3 points that they really, truly did not deserve. If anything, a draw would have been fine in this game. Valladolid had many opportunities. If you really have to focus on what this game was all about for Real Madrid, you got to go back to around the 53rd, 54th minute, where Ferland Mendy is on his own end line, and instead of clearing the ball to the sidelines or corner kick or whatever, anything other than what he did. And what he did is he decided to cross the ball or switch the ball somewhere towards the middle of the box, where the only person that was there was Fabián Orellana for Valladolid. He hits a full volley and Thibaut Courtois comes up with the save. So, the point is, Real Madrid, it was ugly, it was difficult, it was tough, it was physical. Valladolid carried the game, Thibaut Courtois came up with a couple saves, you survived the 3 points, no Karim Benzema, a bunch of injuries, and yet you got 3 points. And guess what? If you look at the standings, if you're Atletico Madrid, you start seeing shadows behind you, shadows that were not there 10 days ago.
Atletico Madrid or the field? Who are you taking, Ali?
Oh, man, come on. I'm going to take Atletico Madrid, but I tell you, from this weekend and from Champions League, I think the overwhelming conclusion, when you watch La Liga and you watch what we consider to be the top La Liga teams, whether that's Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, Barcelona, they're not all that great. In fact, they're not very good. They're not overwhelming teams. They're not dominant teams. So Atletico Madrid doesn't seem like they're going to run away with this. It felt like it was time for them to really create separation. They haven't. They've come back to the pack. And now Barcelona and Real Madrid have an outside chance. And it's very outside chance. However, they have a chance that, again, they did not have a couple of weeks ago.
Ali, as always, thank you very much. Atleti Chelsea, of course, on Tuesday, then Atalanta Real Madrid on Wednesday in the Champions League.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Well, that's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much for everyone who has been on. Stay tuned, though. Craig and Stevie back with us for extra time, as is Jan, as we discover the slightly haunting people behind him and why they're so significant to Norway. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time, as promised. Craig, Stevie and Jan with us. Jan, we saw it during the show. Who are those black and white photos of behind you?
This is the quiz. Maybe the most famous Norwegians. You in UK, you should know about this. Who are they? Musicians. Come on. A group. Three groups.
ABBA.
Three boys.
Aha.
No, ABBA is Swedish. But close. Come on.
Aha.
Aha. Aha.
There you go.
He said aha.
I said aha. Aha.
Take a
said it 5 minutes ago, yeah.
And why
is it a bit slow, Stevie?
Why do you have pictures of them behind you?
It's my wife for once. This is in our bedroom.
Oh.
It's the studio. Yeah.
I'm at the studio. I won't ask the obvious question then.
Don't do that.
And Craig, how can one team be so unlucky with injuries in one specific position? Is it a matter of less options, meaning less rotation? Is it a fitness coaching issue?
No, it's just the season. The season's been it's been tough for a lot of teams with injuries because of the schedule. But you know, the ball started rolling with Van Dijk, and then in no particular order, Gomez, Matip, Fabinho back in there along with Henderson was the two central midfielders that were the engine room for them. Back playing centre half, both of them now injured. I believe the young guy, I think you were saying earlier, the guy they got in from Preston, is injured. I mean, it's just incredible, and you end up playing guys there that are just inexperienced at this level. So I don't think anybody's to blame, because you know, maybe with the case of Matip and others, what you start to do is, you know, you start to try and rush people back from rehab because you've got so limited options, and once that happens, it's generally a snowball effect of just picking up more injuries. So it really has been incredible from Liverpool's perspective.
Have you still got your Christmas tree up, Craig?
No, where? Why?
Over your left shoulder. It looks like there's a Christmas tree there.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's just, it's not a Christmas tree. It's just a tree that my...
looks like a Christmas
tree.
That's a Christmas tree.
It's not a tree that people... It's not... Normal people
well,
use
I don't know
tree.
What a Christmas tree looks like. My wife puts it. I'm
Merry
in my
Christmas,
basement.
Craig.
Merry Christmas, Craig.
No, it's not. So, I've got two trees that nobody ever comes down here apart from me.
Right.
I don't know why it's here. I think it's just keeping it here.
For Stevie, is there hope for Liverpool to make the top four with Kabak and Phillips at the back?
No.
Oh.
I don't think it needs too much explaining. The truth is, they're giving them the best, but they're just not good enough. You know, Phillips is inexperienced. Kabak is only 20, but he's got a decent amount of experience, and he just looks like a guy who's going to be the way he is forever. So if you expect to have two players playing together at the heart of your defence in the Premier League, you're not going to win many games. And you're certainly not going to win many games if your attackers have forgotten where the back of the net is as well. So, no, it's not looking good whatsoever.
Jan, it's looking good for Eintracht Frankfurt, of course, in the top four. Can you start dreaming about a Champions League spot?
I think we can start dreaming about it, but I think the people responsible at Eintracht Frankfurt, they know what this is all about. They, in the beginning of the season, they had to sell Bas Dost to Belgium because to save some money, they got 4 million euro. So, I mean, they are playing above the league at the table at the moment. It was a great thing to get Jovic back. But you see today, although they're winning against Bayern, but they need the best players available all the time. And hopefully the Silva injury, I think he got 18 goals ahead of Haaland, just, of course, behind Lewandowski, but still very, very important for them. But this enthusiasm that they have at the moment is unbelievable. I mean, they can dream. I mean, Eintracht Frankfurt and Wolfsburg are the two big surprises. Union Berlin is up there as well. But you just feel that slowly Dortmund gotta get enough points to be top four. And then there is only one place available because RB Leipzig and Bayern will take the two others.
Dan, I have, as you're probably aware, I have little interest in whether Eintracht Frankfurt get in the top four. But I am really intrigued by... Are AHA really the biggest group to ever come out of Norway?
It is.
Because that's a worry for Norwegian music.
Yeah, but we just got 5 million people, 4 million are fishermen, and the rest is getting oil and gas. And, you know, we don't have so much time
for
music.
Yeah.
Have you ever scored a stunning volley as Arlen did today in your playing career, Jan?
Yes, I have. I was the second best volley shooter in the world just after Mark Hughes.
Craig, can you confirm or deny this?
What's that?
That he was the best volleyer behind Mark Hughes.
Well, I can't confirm or deny it, but I can confirm that Sparky Hughes could volley a ball.
Yeah.
I can tell you that for nothing.
Craig, spectacular volleys in your career?
What?
You score many spectacular volleys in your career?
A couple, but you know, Haaland's not beating my volley at the Kop in 94-95.
Oh, yeah.
Left-footed, 25 yards, top corner, David James, pick it out the net. He ain't beating that, by the way.
Yeah, but he didn't score an own goal in the same game, did he?
Doesn't count.
It does count. Stevie, volleys?
I can't even think of men, you know.
You're right today, Steve. You seem a bit down.
Yeah.
I can't, I've been up since 7 o'clock this morning. Well, I don't usually get out of my bed in midday. I was up. Yeah, but you're used to getting up at 7 in the morning.
Oh, God.
I had to watch Chelsea and Southampton.
Welcome to your world.
When do you normally go up, Stevie? When do you normally go up?
Go up?
Stevie.
Up where?
Yeah, wake up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wake up.
Time? Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you exactly. I probably wake up about 4:30, and then I go back, and then I probably wake up about 8:30, and I go back, and then I'm probably anywhere from 11, just depending.
Jan, put it one way.
If I want to lie in, it'll be 12.
He's not actually awake at the moment. He's just doing this in his sleep. But let me tell you, Jan. I'm an early riser, right? I can be downstairs at 5 or 6 o'clock or something. It's just my body clock now. However, and this is true, if I say to Stevie we're playing golf early, he'll set his alarm. If I say we're playing at 8 or 8:30, he'll set his alarm. But wait for this. If I say to him, Stevie, a couple of other boys are joining us today, we're not playing till 11:30, he said, I'll set my alarm for 10:45. I'm telling you.
Does Lazio have of beating Bayern Munich, Jan, who have been struggling last few matches? No Thomas Müller, who Hansi Flick describes as their system itself.
Well, it depends. It depends if we play Süle at right back, who got a chance.
Oh, you bring up Süle every time, Stevie.
You're talking about Bayern Munich. What do you want me to do?
It's your new nemesis. Now you've perked up.
Yeah.
Hey.
Wondered if you get...
It's not my fault he makes mistakes, is it?
Right.
My job's to point out these
things. I'll tell you what, for somebody that's knackered, you're not off talking a lot.
I just got perked up there with Dan. Dan talking about Süle.
Brilliant. Oh, God.
But while Stevie is talking in his sleep, I can answer the question. I saw them play Dortmund in the first Champions League game. They were brilliant. And Immobile, their striker, was at Dortmund, didn't do well there. He's on fire. And I think there was a lot of talking of different strikers last season. I guess he was the striker who scored the most goals. A fantastic goal scorer. But I think I'm not talking, don't go there. It's still a bandwagon, but I think that they have a problem, Bayern, at the moment to find the right balance in the team. And with Thomas Müller, you can kind of put everyone where he is the glue in that team. And I agree with them saying that maybe you should go down. Maybe Kimmich say, I don't want to play right back. I want to play the number six position. I don't know, but something is wrong at Bayern. And it's a good time for Lazio to get him now in the Champions League. But will they go through over two games? No, I don't think so.
Last question, Jan. Is there still a chance for Manchester United to sign both Jadon Sancho and Erling Haaland during the summer transfer window, especially Ollie's good relationship with Haaland and his father?
This is a story about a guy called Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who was a Norwegian who used to be a coach of Erling Haaland. He put himself in a private jet, went to Salzburg and said, can you please come to Manchester United? This is 14 months ago. And Erling Haaland said, no, I want to go to Dortmund. But hey, Alfie, you play with me. You're his dad. Tell him to come to Manchester United. No, he will go to Dortmund. 15 months later, all Manchester United fans in the world think that Haaland will say yes, no. Do I think so? No. So that's my answer.
Where will he go, Jan?
I think he will stay, and I think he even will stay. And I know there are things that will happen if they don't get into the Champions League, but I think that this summer Dortmund have to sell one player, and that player will be Jadon Sancho. I think that Erling Haaland came to Dortmund to play in front of that yellow wall for 81,000 people and so on, and he never experienced that more some few games. So I think he will at least stay another season at the yellow black team from Dortmund.
I think where he'll end up, I just want to start, he'll end up at Inter Miami, Dan, because David Beckham has hired Phil Neville, and Phil Neville and David Beckham are former teammates of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who's a friend and former Norwegian teammate of Alfie Inge Haaland,
right,
who's a friend and his son. So Inter Miami, you heard it here first.
That's it. Ryan Shawcross and Erling Haaland.
No, no, he won't. No. No, Inter Miami's just signed Ryan Shawcross, so that's all the budget gone.
Oh, that's it.
So that's no happening.
All right, Columbus.
That's it.
But the thing is, if you do that kind of argument and you say, and you have a look at his dad, yes, Alfie Haaland started with Nottingham Forest, then he played for Leeds United and Manchester City. So, of course, the dad will say Manchester United.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much, guys. Stevie, go back to bed. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Some big games, of course, including the Milan Derby.